your mind is so powerful. And I didn't realize it. I went through 3 hell weeks, Ranger School, Delta Force selection, all this stuff. This incident I'm going to explain to you right now is where I realized we are only at 40% of what we are capable of. Here I am, right at the idea to do this race called Badwater 135. I Googled the 10 hardest races in the world. What came up? Crazy race in Death Valley. Summertime, 135 miles. I knew nothing about ultra running. I thought you would camp out, run 20 miles. Then one day, and then run 20 miles again until you get 135 miles. I had no idea what I was doing. Called the race director up. He's like, hey, have you run 100 miles? I was like, what, in a week or what? What are you talking about? He's like, no, in 24 hours or less. I said, no. He goes, you got to qualify to get in this race. You have to run 100 miles in 24 hours or less. He was trying to call my bluff. I call him up on a Wednesday. He goes, hey, there's a race in San Diego on Saturday where it's a 24-hour race where you run around, a track, a one-mile track for 24 hours. And if you get 100 miles, I will consider you in my race. It really helps to be smart, people. And I was not smart in this situation. I said, oh, I did the math. It's about a 14-something minute mile. I can do that. Anyway, I show up on Saturday with the blue lawn chair, Ritz Crackers, Mileplex, and my ex-wife. And every mile I'm going to see her, I'm going to grab some Ritz Crackers and some Mileplex. I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but it's bliss. That whole ignorance is bliss thing. So I get to 70 miles pretty damn fast. I get to 70 miles in like 12, 13 hours. What do you think happens to your body when you haven't trained for that kind of mileage? A lot of bad things, but I thought I was in good shape. It was amazing. So I hadn't gone to the bathroom at all. I sit down, big mistake. I sit down in this blue lawn chair. I sit down looking at my ex-wife. I'm seeing like 3 or 4 of her. And I'm like, oh, this is not good. So I'm trying to play it off because I know where I'm about to go. So I'm sitting there, and when you haven't gone to the bathroom, you're dehydrated, your nutrition's all jacked up. You sit down, you gotta go to the bathroom now. So I look at my ex-wife, I go, do you love me? She said, yes. Why? I go, because I'm gonna take a shit on myself right now. Because I can't stand up, because my blood pressure's all messed up. So I'm sitting there, literally pooping up my back, and peeing blood down my leg. She's a nurse, so she's concerned. And I'm telling you right now, there's one thing you never want to hear as a black person. She said, you're starting to turn white. So I'm sitting there, and I'm all jacked up. And I'm like, okay, how in the world am I gonna, I got 30 miles to go. I should quit, but I didn't. What I started doing through this whole process was I started to study myself in the dark times. So instead of just quitting real fast, I said, no, I'm gonna quit, but not right now. So I sat back for a second and I said, let me get some water, let me hydrate, let me clean myself up a little bit, let me get some nutrition. I wasn't dizzy. It's okay. My feet are all messed up. Let me see if I can walk. I'm going to walk 1 mile and then I'll go home. That would be a great accomplishment for me, 71 miles. So I took this massive thing and I started breaking it down into small chunks. And as I started breaking it down into small chunks, I started realizing maybe I'll walk 1 more mile. But at the pace I was walking, I wasn't going to make the time. So this is when I realized the whole 40% rule. Those of you who worry, red can't hurt me, you understand it. Basically, the 40% rule is when we have a governor on our brains, like a governor on a car. A car may say 130, but if you put a governor on a car, it can only go 101. We do the same thing to our brains. I was born with limited horizons. born on the other side of the tracks. I didn't think I could be anybody. So my governor was myself. So once you take that governor off, you have limitless horizons.
I think one of the most important parts about the way you express yourself in your books is that you do talk about your weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And you do talk about your past and how you started off on this journey. And you talk about how there are those moments that you doubt.
Oh, yeah.
And you, but you still go.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes, like, you know, I call it, you got called an audible. You know, the line of scrimmage, man, like some of the great quarterbacks, they'll be at the line of scrimmage and they'll look at the defense. The defense is off. Defense is shifting. Then you call an audible. In my mind, a lot of times, man, I'm like, it doesn't mean I quit. I don't quit. You know, I may not make it the first time, but I'll come back. I got to call an audible. I got to get my head back in the game. I got to figure this shit out. It doesn't mean you leave. It means you study it more. It means you study it more. And whenever I fail at something, people always say, man, how do you handle failure, man? I fail a lot, dude. I fail all the fucking time. They go, how do you handle it? What I'm trying to do, and this isn't being arrogant, man. It's being real. Not many people are trying to do. So there's not many people that who can even open their fucking mouth and criticize me when I do fail. Because I'm trying to do shit, man, that many people aren't trying to do. But I don't look at failure as failure. I look at failure as your first, second, third, fourth, fifth attempt. I look at them as attempts. I don't look at anything as failure. Because when you're willing to try to do something, not trying is failure. That's not some after school special shit. But when you're able to go out there is no failure. It's attempts. Because when you're trying to do something that's bigger than you, whatever you are, whoever you are, if you're paralyzed, you're trying to walk one step and you didn't fail, motherfucker. That was your first attempt. If that's your biggest thing, that's how your mindset needs to go into everything. So I don't look at it as failure is a big word, like that gets people down. We give so much power to words. I don't. I take the power right away. I didn't fail shit.
In the end, God gives you exactly what you deserve. So if you're not happy with your life, you have to ask yourself, do you really deserve more? Have you really tried 100% of the time? Did you ignore that headache? Are you as competent as you could possibly be? Have you given 100% every time you've done anything? No. You deserve what you have. You deserve your mediocrity because you're an average person. You want a Lambo and these women and a boat and whatever else you want because you see it on Instagram, but wanting something and deserving something are very different things. If you truly deserved it, you'd be working for it in a way that ensures it would be given to you by the universe.
You need to learn how to romanticize your suffering. The beautiful burn of a long run. The death stare of a blank page. Loss. Failure. Heartbreak. There are feelings so rare, so real, you can only get them through pain. Life is empty without them. Love is dull. Art is soulless. Goals are worthless. Your best work lies beyond your worst days. So don't hide away from the dark place. Live in it. Soak in it. Feel everything. Because the hotter the fire, the brighter the burn. Intensity is not meant to stay inside you. It needs to escape, somewhere, to something. A craft, a sport, a mission, an unstoppable obsession that turns your gift into a gift for the world. It's dangerous to be energetic and indecisive. That power builds up with nowhere to go and makes you bitter and insecure. If you're built different, you have to build. You need challenges to find your limits. You need limits to find yourself. There's a version of you that only exists at the end of extreme effort. You enter a dark, dreamlike maze inside your mind. You see yourself from the third person. And the only way out is becoming someone new. Most will never enter that dark place. They won't get close. They'll never see what's on the other side. But what's on the other side is everything.
Your laziness, your lack of discipline, it doesn't just affect you. You see, whether you realize it or not, there are people that depend on you. And more importantly, there are people that will depend on who you could become. Who you decide to be matters. This isn't just about you enjoying your life. When you're too fat to run around and play with your kids, that affects them. When someone falls ill in your family and you're too broke to help them, that affects them. When you haven't developed the mental fortitude and the mental strength to deal with difficult situations and a truly difficult situation arrives and you're too wrapped up in your own problems to help anyone else, that affects them. If you are not going to do it for yourself, do it for the people that depend on you to be the best you.
I'd rather be a man who crashes and burns on his way to large problems than be a normal man who dies in the thoughts of all the things that he wished he could have achieved.
Everyone wants to see fast results, but true success is only done through consistency and time. Otherwise, it's luck. Whether it's hitting the gym, growing your investments, or mastering a mindset, you have to be willing to put in the work consistently. Sure, you won't see results the very next day, but in a year, everyone will be shocked at how far you've come. Remember this, you don't lose when you fail. You lose when you quit.
Your thoughts, you will start to guard them. You'll start to monitor them. You're going to start to really pay close attention to what's going on. See, once you become aware of this truth, that the universal creative power can only be what you feel and think it to be, it will become eager and willing to do your bidding. See, this understanding will enable you to be filled with the expectant attitude and to expect the materialization of the image will become most natural for you. Do you know that if you put this particular tape on and play it every day for at least a month, there's so much depth to this idea. Every time you read it, you're going to see it clearer. It'll be as if you're standing at the base of a tall building facing east. And somebody said, "What's the view like facing east?" And you'll describe it. But then you go in and you raise your consciousness, you move up to the third floor and you go to the east wall and you look through the window. The view is different. You're still facing east, but it's different. And then you go and you raise your consciousness and you go up to the 10th floor and you go to the east wall and you look, but it's different. It's much more beautiful. And ultimately, if you'll keep listening to this and watching it and thinking it and relating it to your own life, you're going to work your way to the roof. And you'll see as far as your eyes can take you. It's like Paul told me one time. He said, go as far as you can see. When you get there, you'll see how to go further. Troward said, if you think your thought's powerful, it's powerful.
If the goal of life is to live a life which in retrospect we are glad that we lived, it's important to give ourselves perspective. To develop that metacognizance, to step away from the urgent, to step away from the phenomenological day-to-day existence, because the present self is a petulant child. It's lazy and it wants the path of least resistance and that glass of wine and that new movie on Netflix and the couch looks really comfortable. Very rarely does it do...
Yeah, well, that's the danger with impulsive happiness, is that it does have that present-bound quality.
And in retrospect, that can lead to a life that's not well lived.
Generally, that yes, yes, yes. Life definitely places philosophical demands on you, whether you want it to or not. And so it is useful to step back. I mean, that's likely why the trait openness evolved. That's the creativity dimension. That's the dimension that allows people to engage in philosophical discourse and to think laterally. And it does allow you to step back and look at things on a broader scale and to generate creative alternatives. The problem with examining your assumptions is it's very disquieting, you know, because you want things to act the way you predict and desire them to act. And you work within a set of axioms and you act them out in order to maintain that predictability, that desirable predictability. If you mess around, the more fundamental the axiom that you question, the more uncertainty you release. And some of that can be positive, but a plenty of it can be anxiety provoking. I mean, just imagine that you're in a relationship and, you know, it's maybe a year into it and you haven't formalized and finalized it, but then one day you allow yourself to ask the question, is this the relationship I want to be in? Well, that's a fundamental question, but just imagine now you're destabilizing your entire future. You're destabilizing your present. You're destabilizing your past, because while engaging in the relationship, you're acting out the assumption that it's the proper relationship. But now you question that. That means the story you told yourself about what was happening while it happened
even though it's already happened, was wrong and something else had happened. And then you have to think through what actually happened. So it's unbelievably demanding. And the more axiomatic the assumption, the more certainty is cast into troublesome chaos. Now, you could say, yeah, but the alternative is worse. And I believe that often that's true. But the thing about the alternative is that you can always forestall it, right?
Mañana.
You can ask that question tomorrow. Mm-hmm, you bet. And it's a very powerful temptation, and no wonder. You know, do you want to dig up the body now, or do you want to wait a month? It's like, well, it'll be more rotten in a month, but it's not a month. It's not now, right? It's not now. And so I understand why people don't want to delve into things, even if their emotions indicate that they should. I mean, I would see this all the time. If you're trying to settle an important issue with your partner, let's say, that can be a tremendously troublesome excavation process. And there's no shortage of pain. But if you sort it out, then maybe things can be better. Doesn't mean it's easy or pleasant. Quite the contrary. It's like surgery. It's like surgery to remove something, you know, that shouldn't be there. It's necessary, but man, still surgery.